From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Journalist Patricia Bosworth is my guest. She wrote a great biography of Montgomery Clift and a wonderful little book about Marlon Brando and lots of other things. Her latest is an in-depth biography of Jane Fonda, and it's called Jane Fonda, The Private Life of a Public Woman. Patricia Bosworth, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to talking to you.
You know, in your Brando book, I remember a great scene where the old fat Brando is in bed and he's watching the young, beautiful Brando on TV, and he feels like he's watching a different person.
Yes.
There are so many Jane Fondas: Barbarella, Bree Daniels, Viola Fields. Does Jane Fonda recognize her younger self?
Does Jane Fonda recognize her younger self or her real self, are you saying?
All
her
the selves.
Many selves.
Yeah.
I think she does. I mean, I think I've spent a lot of time with her over the years. I actually think her truest self is her workout self, in that, you know, her body has always been so important to her, vitally and crucially important to her in every way. And I think with the workout, she sort of found herself, and also, in a sense, she related to millions of women who, you know, it was her philosophy to get them to be aware of their bodies, take care of their bodies, love their bodies. This was a new thing in the 80s. Anyway, I think if that's the real Jane Fonda, I mean, I'm happy about that, because I think it's a good Jane Fonda.
You sound a little like Jane Fonda.
A lot of people tell me that. Well, you know, I used to be an actress.
Yes, and you studied at the Actors Studio.
I did, and I'm still there. I now run the Playwright Directors Unit at the Actors Studio.
Wow, what was it like when you were there as a student?
Oh my God, it was an incredible place. You know, it was the place for actors to be. Everybody, I mean, when I say everybody, but all the new young talents were there: Al Pacino, Paul Newman, Robert De Niro, Estelle Parsons, Jerry Page, Anne Bancroft, Ellen Burstyn. I mean, they were all there working along with us. We worked together separately. We did scenes. We all studied with Lee Strasberg. We all used to go to his house and have Chinese dinners, sometimes with Marilyn Monroe. It was glamorous and romantic and very intense.
What was a session like? I mean, you would work on a scene and then you would perform the scene.
You would go in and do a scene. Sometimes you usually would do a scene just with one other actor. I remember Jane. I don't think Jane ever did scenes with more than one other actor, and I usually didn't either. But when, for example, Jane would do a scene, Lee always wanted her to do very simple scenes. She can cry very easily, and he wanted her to relax and be natural and not be so intense. And so he often had her do scenes that were very simple scenes. That sounds strange, but it was hard for her in the beginning. I mean, I think she's a superb technician now, but in the beginning she was learning how to act the way everybody else does when they start out.
Yeah, and which film do you think is the film where she is Jane Fonda, and that sort of, you know, in the beginning she's kind of stiff in her earliest.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, for me, and I think actually even Jane feels this, I think Clute was closest to her. I mean, granted, she played a call girl, but I'm talking about the emotional, you know, content of it, the way she portrayed this particular woman who was both independent but also wanted love. She was very articulate about her feelings, her needs, particularly in these improvisations that she did during the movie with Vivian Nathan. I'm sure you remember them.
Mm-hmm.
Vivian was an Actors Studio actress, and they improvised on all sorts of things during the movie, you know, to talk about. Vivian played her analyst in the movie. Anyway, I just feel that in that movie, Jane really reflected the best of herself.
That movie really has an impact, I think, on the history of women and women's sexuality.
Oh, absolutely. It was very, very much a woman's movie. I mean, it was at the height of the feminist movement, and Jane was a feminist heroine, and she, even the fashions that she wore, you know, the thigh-high boots, the mini skirts, the leather coat, the shag haircut, was copied by thousands of women.
You know, nobody I knew wore a bra back then, but I think she was the first person to not wear a bra.
That's right, she did. She did not wear a bra. In fact, you could see her nipples, and, you know, when she became a political activist, I remember going to a huge demonstration on the Washington Mall where she ran out on the stage and talked about the bombing of Cambodia, and she was wearing a T-shirt and jeans, and I remember somebody say, "Hey, you can see her nipples through her T-shirt."
Well, those are the important things.
Of course, not the war in Cambodia. No, but seriously, she was actually very eloquent and very very moving, and I thought she gave a wonderful speech that night.
I think you talk about this in your book, Sam, but you know, to what degree before Clute, and coming home for that matter, but to what degree did people even acknowledge an orgasm from a woman, let alone acknowledge it in a movie? Before Joan Fonda.
Well, it wasn't so much in... it was in Coming Home, I guess. Have you read that incredible book, that incredible article about Jane and her orgasms of being the first American actress, the first actress, really, to express the orgasm on screen? In any event, yeah, I think Jane was perhaps the first actress to both simulate orgasm in Barbarella, which she did.
Yeah.
And then in Coming Home, I can't think of any other actress, but she singled out in this very academic book called Screening Sex by Linda Williams,
mm-hmm.
who talks about the on-screen orgasms of Jane Fonda and how important it was in movies. And then at the same time, she talks about Brando and Last Tango.
Yeah.
That they were both these American actors, both from the Actors Studio, were the most sexual actors ever on screen. You know, they were able to express sexuality on screen very openly. I think it's sort of interesting that they both, you know, came out of the studio, and also that they both, Last Tango was a European movie, and of course Jane, in a way, had her sexual education via Roger Vadim, her French director husband, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting to think about Clute and Last Tango in Paris, because both of those movies, I think along with the movie The Misfits, they're so honest as to be almost uncomfortable to watch.
Oh, very much so. I agree with you. I agree. Misfits, too, is really amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
And poor Marilyn Monroe. I shouldn't say poor Marilyn Monroe, but... And she, too, was, you know... She was Jane's idol. Jane just revered her and, you know, watched her and studied her and knew her at the studio, as we all did.
Yeah, you know, some people say Clark Gable was not a great actor, and I say, well, look at The Misfits.
Oh, I thought he was
so
wonderful.
Incredible.
I have loved him in all the movies he's been in, all the movies he was in with Lana Turner, Honky Tonk. And
yeah, oh, they're great. You know, I think he's great.
Oh, yeah, he was great.
But he was never quite as honest as he was in The Misfits. And Eli Wallach, he has some dialogue in that movie that's really still uncomfortable to listen to.
Oh, I know, because Eli played the man who was really in love with Marilyn Monroe, remember?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, yeah, no. Eli took wonderful photographs of Marilyn Monroe and Montgomery Clift, which I have. Eli's a very good photographer. He took lots of photographs on the set of that movie.
I almost forgot about Clift. That was pretty much the last great film Montgomery Clift.
That was the last film he did, and you know, the famous remark that Marilyn Monroe said, "You're the only man who's only person who's more screwed up than I am, more drugged up, more screwed up, more neurotic than I am." As she watched him, you know, poor man, he was in a very bad state in those days.
We're talking with Patricia Bosworth, and her new book is a in-depth biography of Jane Fonda called The Private Life of a Public Woman. How did I imagine you've been working on this book for years. How did you feel when Jane Fonda wrote her own book? Did it make you feel like your book was less important?
Which, you mean her memoir?
Yeah.
Oh, no, not at all. No, I mean, you know, I knew all along that Jane was writing her memoir. In fact, that's one of the reasons at first she didn't want to be interviewed by me, although we knew each other. But, oh, no, not at all. No, I feel that her book was very helpful to me. I feel that I told a different story. You know, Peter Fonda, her brother, said to me once, Jane has her version of her life, but there are many versions, and you should get all the other versions. And I have tried to do that, and that's what I did do in this book. Of course, I drew from her book very, very heavily, and, you know, she gave me total access, not just to her book, but to her, herself. So, no, not at all. I learned a lot from the book, but I also got a lot of stuff on my own, stuff that had never been published before, or not known before. Just, you know, a person's life is so complicated and multi-leveled. There are always many, many versions, you know?
Well, but because you're friends with her, did you feel in any way restrained from saying something, anything?
It was difficult. I mean, it is difficult to write about a person who's alive, and it's even more difficult if you know the person and you like and respect the person. What I tried to do, because, you know, Jane is, she's beautiful and vulnerable and sensitive, but she's also ruthless and powerful and can be very unpleasant, like most great celebrities, or she wouldn't have gotten where she'd gotten if she hadn't been ruthless. And what I tried to do was to, if I found or discovered something unflattering about her that I felt really was revealing, I would put it in, but I also always tried to balance the unpleasant stuff with good stuff. Because, I mean, people are a mixture of good and bad, and she's very human. But that's what I tried to do, I made a huge effort to do that, and I think I succeeded.
I think so, too. For instance, she's not a very good parent.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to be delicate about that particular?
Yeah. Well, she herself has finally admitted it. In the beginning, I think she denied it to herself. But yeah, she wasn't when she was young, when her children were very young, well, particularly her little girl, her daughter, Vanessa. She abandoned her to go off and be a political activist. And her daughter, I think, perhaps has never forgiven her. They have a very volatile relationship. But Jane admits that. I don't know whether she totally regrets it, because I remember one night I was having dinner with her and Vanessa Redgrave, who had also gone off to speak against the war, and she too left her kids at home, and both women were talking about how guilty they felt, and yet, you know, had they been men, would it have been different? Neither one of them really regretted it totally, but they did regret it in a way, because it did cause tremendous pain, not just to them, but certainly to their children.
One other thing I want to ask you about in terms of, you know, being sensitive about Jane, you kind of gloss over a little bit the conversion to born-again Christianity. Did you have strong feelings when that occurred?
Well, let's put it this way. Her conversion didn't last long, okay? I mean, I think in the beginning, you know, she jumps into things. She's very impulsive, and that happened when she was very unhappy with Ted Turner, and their chauffeur, you know, was driving past his church, and Jane was crying in the limousine, and he said, why don't you go inside into the church with me? It might comfort you. And that's the way it began. And then she also had lessons from Bible lessons from one of her women friends in Atlanta. But, I mean, I honestly do not think it is the most important thing in her life. I can't, you know.
You think she's less born again now, in other words?
Oh, yeah. I don't think she ever really was born again. That's a terrible thing to say.
That's,
I mean,
okay.
Look, I think Jane is a very decent, good person in many ways, but
yeah.
I don't see her as somebody. I don't sense that she's very, very spiritual, you know? I just don't.
Well, Patricia Bosworth, you know these people, so you can tell me more. But I always get the impression from Jane Fonda, and I got this when I read her book and when I read your book, and also about Marlon Brando, especially when I read his book and when I read your book, that these two people are, like many actors, even Henry Fonda possibly, empty vessels that are filled with their role, and when they're not playing a role, they're not there.
Well, you know, I don't like to call them empty vessels, but I do think that they always have to play a role. And Brando always said, you know, everyone acts all the time. No, I think Jane needs to have a role to play, and she always has a role at her fingertips to play. This is the way I think she survives.
But do you think it makes her I'm deficient as a person in some way?
No, I don't, because she has achieved so much. She has genuinely achieved a great deal in her life as an actress, as an activist, as a philanthropist. And okay, maybe she plays all these roles, but she really knows how to play them very well. So no, I don't think she's deficient. I mean, maybe she's deficient in human terms, it's like in ordinary mortal terms, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
She's not an ordinary mortal. She really isn't.
No, because she's Jane Fonda.
Yeah, really, that's true. Right. I mean, you've met her, haven't you, or not?
I have met her once, yeah.
I mean, you know, this woman is an outsized person, larger than life, you know?
I handed her, like, $800 that she dropped at a...
You're kidding! How did that happen?
We were at a Tom Hayden benefit, and I was working backstage, and she was walking ahead of me and dropped a tremendous wad of cash.
Oh, my God! Well, of course, she has tremendous wads of cash herself.
And I thought...
She's a very rich woman.
I thought I could keep this, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I gave it. Henry Fonda, and your book has a lot about Henry Fonda in it, naturally, because he was her daddy. Henry Fonda is not the person that he appears to be in the movies.
Oh, not at all. No, he's very cold and detached and is totally very self-involved, a huge narcissist, a womanizer, which I never dreamed. I didn't know anything about his huge womanizing, which one of his wives told me. I didn't know that. And of course, he was also not at all loving or caring about Jane or Peter at all as a father. Although I think he was very proud of them, but he could never show his emotions. He had been taught never to show emotion. It was difficult living with him.
There's a great caption in one of the photos in your book that has a picture of Peter and Jane and Henry, and they're all smiling, and you say they look very friendly, but they haven't been speaking to each other.
That's right. That was during the making. They were all making movies in New York at the same time, and they weren't speaking to each other. But, of course, true to being, you know, all movie stars above everything, they posed and smiled happily for the cameras.
What do you think the influence of her mother's suicide had on her life?
Oh, I think it was the defining incident in her life. I don't think she's never forgotten it. It haunts her. She's a suicide survivor, which means that she's a workaholic and somebody you know, who is never stops. I think she'll never get over it. I think you never get over being when you're a suicide survivor.
I guess that's something you have in common.
It is, and that's one of the reasons we bonded, I think, because my brother and father committed suicide, and I did tell Jane finally about it, and it was a strange connection that we had. It's funny because we didn't really talk about it. I gave her a book that I'd written about my family and called Anything Your Little Heart Desires, and she read it, and then all she said was, "You understand," you know, meaning that I understand her in ways that maybe somebody doesn't understand who has not had suicide in their life, you know. And although, as I say, we never talked about it much after that, it kind of released both of us. And that's why I do. I really feel very sympathetic to her, even though she can be extremely difficult because of what she's gone through.
We're talking to Patricia Bosworth, her latest book, Jane Fonda, The Private Life of a Public Woman. Could you tell us a little bit about your father?
Oh, my father, his name was Bartley Crum, and he was a lawyer in San Francisco during the 30s, 40s, and 50s. He was really quite an amazing man. He was a child of the century, and I think he was in a part of a lot of historical events, which is why the book I wrote about him was a cultural history. He worked with Wendell Willkie, wrote Wendell Willkie speeches when he ran for president. He then worked for Truman on a committee called the Anglo-American Committee of Inquiry into Palestine, which was a committee which was trying to decide whether or not 100,000 Jews could be led into the Holy Land. This is right after the Second World War, when the camps were being opened, the DP camps and the concentration camps. And then after that, he became one of the lawyers for the Hollywood Ten. During the blacklist, he was blacklisted himself. He also was investigated by Hoover, and his passport was taken away because he's very left-wing. Very much a crusader and an idealist and a an incredible man. And I guess the last thing he did, he worked with Bobby Kennedy when Kennedy was investigating the Teamsters, the corruption within the Teamsters Union. And my father was always under a lot of pressure, and my brother had committed suicide, I guess, a couple of years before my father did. And I think my father always blamed himself. It's a long story, which I can't really capsule it, but in the end, he did kill himself, which was very, very sad for me, for everybody who knew him. But he was really quite an interesting man, and my book is going to be an e-book now, which I'm very happy about because I want more people to read it.
Well, and we should mention that Jane Fonda, The Private Life of a Public Woman, is an e-book also.
It is. I mean, all my other books, my Deanne Arbus book and Brando and The Clift, they're all going to be e-books, and this is good because I think I'll get more readers, I hope.
I hope so, too, because both the Montgomery Clift book and the Marlon Brando book, I think, are the best books about their subjects.
Oh, well, I love my Brando book. I mean, it was the smallest book I've ever done. You know, it was only 50,000 words, but I love Brando's life. I loved him as a character. I think he's such a great character, don't you?
Yes. it's part of that little Penguin Lives series.
Yeah, I think it was a great series, don't you?
I do. I was a fan of that series and a fan of your book. And as I was saying earlier, you really paint a sort of a sad but a wonderful picture, a sympathetic picture of the older Brando.
Oh, God, yeah. He was so sad. I did see him, you know. I did see him near the very end. He was so heavy when he made that movie at the end of his life. But he was so, I think he must have been close to 300 pounds.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it was awful to see.
Especially since he was so beautiful. Yeah. And that's one of the, you know, recurring themes in your Jane Fonda book, the fact that Jane Fonda was and is very beautiful.
Mm.
That's not something that, you know, beautiful women have, I think, the disadvantage. You know, for me, getting older doesn't mean anything because I was never too great looking to begin with. But for a beautiful woman, I think it's harder. And so she's definitely had some body issues. You talk about her bulimia, but also that she had breast implants.
Had breast implants, and she's had facelifts. I frankly think, I don't think she needed to do as much work as she's had done. In the years that I've known her, her face has changed a lot. I have a picture of her a couple of years ago when she came here to my apartment for dinner, before she had a lot more work done on her face. By the way, I think she looks great. I don't mean that she doesn't look terrific. I just think she looks very different. She loves the way she looks, by the way. She told me she has never been as happy as she is now with the way she looks.
Well, that's good.
And that's great, you know, but I happen to think that it's just a lot of work. I mean, that's my opinion, but everyone always says, oh, my God, she looks so fabulous, and she does.
It was interesting when, and she talks about in her book, getting breast implants, being you know, the star of Clute and being the person who was willing to, you know, just show her body as it was. To suddenly decide breast implants were required, it was odd.
Well, she had them done. I think while she was still married to Tom Hayden, and the marriage wasn't going very well. I mean, it was breaking up really, and she wanted him to still want her and desire her, and so she had these breast implants. And her kids were so upset. But I have that very funny story in the book, at least. I think it's a funny story where she runs into one of her ex-lovers. She's just had the breast implants. And he's, oh, Jane, why did you do it? They're just bulging out of her. And she opened up her blouse, and she said, I like them. And he said, I like the little ones much better. Which is sort of sad again, don't you think?
Yeah, it is. But now you say she's had them removed now?
Oh, yeah. No, she has had them removed for over 10 years ago. When I first started seeing her down at her ranch, when I began researching the book, was 2002, and she had just had them removed. She kept them throughout her marriage to Ted Turner, which is sort of interesting.
Hmm.
But when she left Ted Turner, she had her breast implants taken out.
And does she have them in a little drawer for the Jane
Fonda? Oh, please don't say that. No, I don't know what happened. It all sounds very painful to me.
It does. I don't want them.
Well, you don't have to have them, God. Nor do I.
Yeah. Well, nobody has to, I guess.
No, they don't. But I don't understand that myself. I just don't.
Jane Fonda's kind of returned to acting now. Do you think she still has some, you know, a great autumn in front of her, a la Katharine Hepburn?
She could. She can do anything, you know. She could do anything. That's the thing about her. She really is hugely talented. But she wants to do many things. She wants to be a philanthropist. She wants to keep writing these books, these how-to books. She wants to, you know, be an activist. So she doesn't really focus totally on being an actress. I think she could be one of the great actresses of the world, along with Meryl Streep. I do. You know, she's been offered a lot of parts that Meryl Streep played.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's her choice. I think she's doing a series now on HBO. Probably be very successful. And she has two movies coming out in the next year. And she may be doing other movies. I don't know. I haven't talked to her recently about that.
Has she told you, has she read the book, and has she told you what she thought?
To be honest, she called me and said she loved the pictures. And then she did call again and say that she loved the beginning. She found a couple of things that were mistakes that she wanted me to change, which I did. I sent her the galleys, of course.
Yeah.
But since then, I haven't heard anything. But believe me, if she didn't like it, I would have heard from her. I would have. I know I would have.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't think she'll avoid you forever, having now that you've written it?
I don't think so, but she might. I mean, it's, you know, I finished the book, and there may not be any place in her life for me. I understand this. This is the way she is. This is the way she is. I understand this.
What's next for you? What are you thinking of writing?
Well, right now I'm finishing a screenplay that I wrote. It's based on an article I wrote in Vanity Fair about my life in pornography when I worked with Bob Guccione at Penthouse.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
About 20 years ago, I worked with Bob Guccione. He was had created a female porn magazine called Viva.
Yes.
And I was the editor for 2 years, and then he fired me because I wouldn't hire a convicted rapist as a lovelorn columnist. Seriously, but in any event, I wrote this piece about him when he was actually had lost most of his money. He was very ill. He's since died, and I really like Bob. But anyway,
yes.
I wrote a piece about his whole life and his career and everything, and then we wove in my own experiences working with him as kind of this fish out of water, Sarah Lawrence graduate working in porn. And it's sort of funny. Anyway, it was optioned by Trudy Styler and Eileen Maisel. Do you know them?
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost finished with the second draft.
Well, when that's finished, will you come back to From the Bookshelf and talk porn?
Of course I will. If I can talk porn on the radio, can I?
Oh, sure. Of course you can.
But I'm also hoping to do another memoir, maybe, about my life. What's left of my life. That's what I'd like to do.
Well,
I
want to thank you so much for being here with us. It's Jane Fonda, The Private Life of a Public Woman, Patricia Bosworth. Thanks for being with us on From the Bookshelf.
Okay, bye.
That's all the time we have for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and that you'll come back and see me again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or find us on Facebook and iTunes. I want to thank Patricia Bosworth, author of the biography of Jane Fonda, for being my guest this week. The production of From the Bookshelf is aided and abetted by Francis Venegas. Thanks, Francis. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.